First Years, a podcast for all but geared toward adult first-time readers of Harry Potter, who need a space to enjoy each book and have adult conversations about it. My name is Sarah, and I'm honored that you've allowed me on this journey with you. Crack open a butterbeer, grab a seat, and let's discuss. Today, we're talking about dreams and parenting. Welcome, everybody, to episode 28 of First Years. Today, we are going over chapters 2 through 4 of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. Before we start, I have some house points news. Our third House Cup tournament has proven to be our best one yet. So I have a few extra ways to earn house points this time around. So rating and reviewing is one of them. Mindful Magic Mondays is also one of them, and we started doing trivia once a week where you can get points for participating and extra points for getting correct answers. So, after only 2 weeks, Hufflepuff is in the lead with 495 points. Right behind them is Gryffindor, coming out on top after being in last the last few years at 260 points. Slytherin has 235 points, and Ravenclaw has 60. So there is plenty of opportunities to win house points, but those are the current standings, and we're just starting, so I'm so excited to see how these standings change or don't change as we cover Goblet of Fire. So be on the lookout for that on our Instagram at First Years Pod. Okay, so chapter 2, we finally get to see Harry again, and he's connected to chapter 1 because it's what he was dreaming about. When Harry wakes, his scar is hurting, and it seems that he dreamt about everything that we read in chapter 1. And Harry's trying to keep all the details together, but like most dreams, the details start to slip away as he wakes up and actively tries to remember. And I feel really bad for Harry here because he's starting to feel worried and a little paranoid because his scar hurts. And in the past, we've seen that that means that Voldemort is close by. So he worries that he may be at Privet Drive, even though he convinces himself that that probably isn't very likely. But still, it kind of feels like a nightmare, doesn't it? Where anything could be lurking in the shadows of the early morning. So let's just dive right in and talk about dreams. Dreams occur in what's called REM sleep, the rapid eye movement part of the night. This is part of a cycle that we all go through when we sleep, and we go through that entire cycle several times a night. There are the regular dreams that you and I both have that we may or may not remember when we wake up. There's also lucid dreams where you're aware that you're dreaming, and many people actually gain the ability to control the dreams or change the dreams. And then there are also nightmares, which are bad dreams. They can occur because of stress, fear, trauma, illness, or a variety of other problems, and those are dreams that usually tend to wake you up. No one really knows why we dream, but studies have shown that it's actually very beneficial for us, right? So there's an experiment that I read about while I was researching for this where scientists prevented others from dreaming by waking them up before they hit REM sleep. And they were seen to have increased tension, anxiety, depression, weight gain, and a harder time concentrating. So that tells us that it's probably very important for us to dream. And sleep in general is actually very important. That's how we restore our bodies. That's how we catalog memories. People who don't get enough sleep tend to have poorer memories because they're not getting that, they're not going through enough of the cycles where all of the short-term stuff turns into long-term stuff. They don't get cataloged as well. And dreaming is thought to help solve problems and process our emotions, right? How many times have you heard the phrase, sleep on it? Or how many times have you woken up with the perfect solution to something and you're hurrying to write it down? You should always write it down, because when you wake up in the middle of the night and you're like, oh, I got it, and you're like, I'll remember it in the morning, you won't remember it in the morning, I promise. So some people say that dreams don't mean anything, while others think that they're linked to our own lives and the universe and gods and spirit guides and angels, all of that sort of otherworldly spiritual stuff. And there's debate over whether or not you can sort of tell the future through your dreams or get messages about the future through your dreams. Experts say that it's just a coincidence. Other people say differently. I am in this other camp where I actually think that we can get a lot of messages through our dreams. My mother is one of those people who have passed on visit her in her dreams. Not super often, but often enough where that must be how she communicates. So it's thought that when we are dreaming, it's easier to get messages through our dreams because our rational minds aren't the ones that are leading. And when we get these messages, when you pay attention to your dreams, some things may be clear, other things may be vague. Some messages come in the form of symbols that mean specific things to you. So you need to pay attention to those. So our dreams come from the unconscious, and they occur in the theta brainwave state, where we're more open to receiving messages, insights, and other information. There's also a deeper state of delta waves, where our minds are passive and we can start picking things up from the quote-unquote collective unconscious. So this is where we can gain insights from or about the people around us, the past, present, future, places we've been before, places we haven't been before. It's the same collective unconscious that people believe that we're all connected to. For example, if you get your tarot reading done, the way that someone is able to read your tarot cards is by connecting with you through that collective unconscious. We can get information about things that we need to do, things that we've done, things we're in the middle of doing. And also, like I said before, some of us even communicate with people who have passed on through our dreams. Our dreams happen spontaneously. We usually can't control them. And I mean this as to when they happen. We can't really force ourselves to dream at this specific time. It sort of just happens. And just like Harry, where he's waking up from the dream and he's trying to remember everything that happened, we're also not entirely sure why we forget dreams. People say that it could be because otherwise we'd forget about, or we would forget the difference between our own memories and dreams, which makes sense to me. I thought that was a pretty cool theory. It can also be that our bodies might block the memory creation process during that time, and so we only sort of remember the ones that happen right before we wake up. I would argue that this dream that Harry has is more of a nightmare, like I said earlier. You know, it's not comforting, it's scary, someone dies in it, Harry hears that he's marked for death in it again, and it also wakes him up. But my question is, why do we think Harry is dreaming about this? Is this a message he's getting as he's sleeping? Is it from that collective unconscious? Or is it something else? When Harry wakes up and is worrying about his scar, we get this really heartbreaking moment where he's trying to figure out who he can reach out to talk to about this. He contemplates reaching out to Hermione or Ron or even Dumbledore and quickly pushes all of those options aside. The words to Dumbledore sound stupid to him, and when he thinks of asking Ron about it, he realizes that he doesn't want the whole Weasley family worrying about him and thinking less of him because he was in pain after a dream. And I think the most important line here is, quote, what he really wanted, and it felt almost shameful to admit it to himself, was something like someone like a parent, an adult wizard whose advice he could ask without feeling stupid, someone who cared about him, who had had experience with dark magic, unquote. And it's here that he finally thinks of Sirius. But I want to underline here that we learn so much about Harry in this line and the trauma that he's been through in his life. Because that's what it is. It's trauma. Growing up in a household like the Dursleys, where you're made to feel like it's nothing, and it's known that you can't go to anyone for help, you can't trust anyone to care about how you feel, that really affects someone. Having a loving environment, guardians you can trust in this world, especially at this age, is so important. And for Harry to not have that, I think that's why he feels insecure about reaching out to the Weasleys, or even to Dumbledore about what he's going through, because he's used to doing everything himself. We really haven't seen Harry in an emotional situation where he needs to lean on others for help. And here he's worried about something, rightfully so, and yet feels dumb about it, and is ashamed to recognize that he does need help, and he wants someone there to help him. The Dursleys, we've seen, even with someone they love, aren't good parents. They're cruel to Harry, and yet they also don't have Dudley's best interests at heart either. Now let's talk about this whole diet thing. It's pretty obvious that the Dursleys are way too overindulgent with Dudley. We have seen that from day one. And we see here in this book that it has finally gotten them into trouble. Dudley's school uniform doesn't fit him anymore because, and this is a quote from the book, he is now roughly the size and weight of a young killer whale. At birth, a killer whale calf weighs 265 to 353 pounds, and they are 8.5 feet tall. I'm guessing Dudley is not 8.5 feet tall. And so the whole family is on a diet together to help Dudley feel better. Now the food that's mentioned in this at breakfast is a quarter of a grapefruit. That has 26 calories, no fat, 7 grams of carbs, 4 grams of sugar, and less than half of a gram of protein. Then lunch is cottage cheese and grated celery. So assuming that it's 1 cup of cottage cheese, that is 222 calories, 10 grams of fat, 8 grams of carbs, and 25 grams of protein. So at least there's that. But we're still under 300 calories for the first half of the day. That is literally not going to sustain anybody. That's not healthy. That's way too low. No wonder he's completely miserable. For someone like Dudley, he could probably eat the same things that he has been eating, just in smaller portions, and like walk around the block, and he would still lose weight. So who is this school nurse? We need to have a chat about nutrition, because that's ridiculous. No one should be eating. I'm assuming if that's the first half of the day, his total day would be like 600 calories. No one should be eating that few calories in a day. It's not healthy. Don't do it. This woman is giving terrible advice to this family. So in the middle of this, Harry gets a letter from the Weasleys via Muggle Post asking if they can come pick him up for the Quidditch World Cup. And Vernon is having a dilemma because he simultaneously wants Harry miserable and also wants him out of the house at the same time. In book 3, we saw that Harry was starting to stand up for himself by making a deal with Uncle Vernon about getting his permission slip signed. Now, Harry doesn't make deals. He goes ahead with calling them out on their being awful and threatening them using Sirius's past as a convicted criminal on the run. So we see Vernon say, "You stand there in the clothes Petunia and I have put on your ungrateful back." Harry says, "Only after Dudley finished with them." Vernon, "I will not be spoken to like that." And then it says, "But Harry wasn't going to stand for this. Gone were the days where he had been forced to take every single one of the Dursleys' stupid rules. He wasn't following Dudley's diet, and he wasn't going to let Uncle Vernon stop him from going to the Quidditch World Cup. Not if he could help it. And he proceeds to say that he's going to write to Sirius, and if Sirius finds out that he's unhappy, well, things aren't going to be so good. And this is great. I really love this. He's had enough of their shit, and he's going to stand up for himself and claim his own space and say, I don't deserve to be treated this way. You people suck. I'm going to do what I want to do because I'm allowed to be happy. We love to see it. He has decided that he just isn't going to budge and let them make him feel guilty for not being grateful for getting the bare minimum of what a child needs. No, Harry's going to stick up for himself and call them out and say, I'm allowed to go to the Quidditch World Cup. I don't need your permission for it. And I also love that Ron's note is like, regardless of what they say, we're coming to pick you up anyway. So, great. And they do come to pick him up, but they're late. And I think it's interesting that they are, actually. It struck me as an interesting detail to include. We've seen them be late to getting on the train before, you know, where people are forgetting things and they have to go back and forth. But since they're coming from their own house, you would think that they wouldn't be. So do we think this is just like a character trait of the Weasleys? Is this just a product of the Weasleys just having such a full household and it's hard to get everybody ready by 5 o'clock? Or was there a delay in connecting the fireplace to the flu network? Who knows? But they show up via flu powder. But we find out that at the Dursleys, since book one, they've sealed off the fireplace and put an electric one in. And so all of the Weasleys get stuck in the chimney. So Mr. Weasley does the practical thing and blasts it open, which to us who know magic know that he can fix everything. But the Dursleys don't, and we get this like really awkward, excruciatingly awkward scene between them where we're waiting for Fred and George to come back with all of Harry's things, and Arthur Weasley's trying to make conversation, and the Dursleys are like, what did you just do to our living room? It's so awkward. You can cut the tension with a knife. Oh my god. And just when they're about to leave, Harry says bye to the Dursleys, and they don't respond. And Mr. Weasley calls them out on that. It's hard to read because Mr. Weasley cares a lot for Harry, and he's also a genuinely nice person. While the Dursleys just don't give a shit about Harry and aren't nice to people at all. But I think we also get that Mr. Weasley may not have known the extent to how terrible Harry's situation is, where the Dursleys don't even care enough to say goodbye to him. Even Harry says it doesn't matter, but Mr. Weasley doesn't let it go until they do say goodbye. And then right when they're about to leave, Dudley again is victim to wizardry, the first time getting a pig's tail from Hagrid, and now he's eaten one of the candies that Fred and George dropped, and his tongue is growing at an enormous rate, and there's complete chaos and panic. The Dursleys won't let Mr. Weasley help, and he's just like, go, I'll take care of it. Harry steps through the fire and heads back to the burrow to let Mr. Weasley handle it himself. So we end this chapter with Harry has escaped the Dursleys again. This time he doesn't need to run away, but he's taken by his best friend to spend the last 2 weeks of summer together, and they will be going to the Quidditch World Cup. Do we think that there's a reason that Harry dreamed about what happens in chapter one? Or do we think it's a coincidence? What do we think we've seen now about the importance of parenting? And how do Vernon, Petunia, Sirius, and Mr. Weasley fill those roles? Do we feel bad about the joke played on Dudley, or do we think he deserved it? Let us know at firstyearspodcast@gmail.com or tag us on Twitter or Instagram at firstyearspod. We have a Real House Cup competition now, so make sure to keep an eye out for our Mindful Magic Mondays. Also interacting with our stories. Every Wednesday we're doing trivia where you can earn house points just for participating and earn extra points for getting the correct answers. So be sure to keep an eye out for that. Also, you can always earn more house points by rating and reviewing this podcast and leaving your name and your Hogwarts house. For next episode, read chapters 5 through 7, and I will see you guys next time. Sources can be found in our show notes or on our website at authorsarahjonesdittmeyer.info/firstyearspodcast. That's Sarah with an H, and Dittmeyer is spelled Dittmeyer. Please remember that staying a Harry Potter fan is the biggest form of revolt that you can have, and we are committed to continuing